committee this evening. And Ben, would you be so kind to call the roll?
Barford will be arriving a little bit late. Bennett is excused. Carlson?
Present.
Carlson's present. Chinchak Lyon?
Present.
Chinchak Lyon's present. Alder Evers?
Here.
Alder Evers is present. Glazer?
Present.
Glazer's present. Gonzalez?
Present.
Salas is present. Alder Govindarajan? Not present. Groot?
Present.
Groot is present. Himes? I believe he said he'd be
Jumped
attending.
on. Present.
Oh, present. Okay, there we go. Kinderman?
Present.
King?
Here.
King is present. Luskin? Luskin not present. McKay
Present.
is present. Mendez not present. Perkins. Perkins not present. Alder Revere. Revere not present. Alder Vitiver.
Here.
Vitiver is present. Weber.
Here.
Weber is present. Wells?
Present.
Wells is present. Ziegler?
Present.
Ziegler is present. We do have quorum.
Great. Thank you so much. Next item on the agenda is the approval of the September 26, 2024 minutes. Motions in order.
To move, Brenda.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you, Janine. Any discussion or comments on the minutes? Seeing or hearing none, unless there's objection, we will claim the minutes are approved. Not hearing any objection. Thank you. At this point, disclosures or recusals from members of the body for anything on our agenda tonight, but it looks like this is all informational. Okay. Any public comment, Ben?
Only for presentation agenda items, no other public comment.
Great, thank you. So the first item on new business is Ben suggested his calendar schedule for 2025, and that's on the agenda. Any comments that people would like to make?
Mary, if I could just give one or two lines of background, or maybe more.
Sure.
The schedule on with the agenda is kind of following the pattern that we have done for the past several years of doing the fourth Thursday and then a combination meeting for November, December. The committee, if you so choose again for next year, could opt to have one or more meetings in person. If that's desired, that should be part of the motion, like kind of calling out which dates those might be. And I could work with UW staff on location. We might want to search for a slightly larger room than we had for our in-person meetings this year, but we don't need to decide on the specific location immediately. And then the one other thing I wanted to mention is, and I know Alders will be aware of this and perhaps some others as well, if the upcoming referendum doesn't pass in November, there might be some discussion of the format of joint campus going forward. It's possible that myself and other staff that staff committees within the planning division might be kind of reassigned to other duties. So just to make the commission aware of that. And so I guess regardless of whatever schedule gets approved for 2025 tonight, that might come into play. So with that, I'll turn it back over to you all for discussion and vote.
Doug.
Yeah, I like this pattern with a last Thursday with a combo November-December meeting, partly because as past chair, Ben and I helped implement the schedule. I also think that having one or two in-person meetings is helpful. It was nice to see everybody last time. So I'm just going to propose, I'm open to discussion March and September as being in-person meetings.
Is that a motion then, Doug?
I will motion that, and I'm open to discussion on the in-person meetings or the schedule if anybody has any.
So is there a second to the motion?
Second.
Great. Discussion.
I will be interested in two dates to meet in person.
Any other comments?
Yeah, I have Doug's. I just want to mention I have Doug's motion as having the two dates, one in March and one in September.
Great. Further discussion. Janine.
Madam Chair, the question I have is, do you typically have one of those meetings in the city and then one on campus, or are both of those preferred to be on campus?
They've always been on campus just because of the parking. It's a lot easier and congestion downtown.
Makes sense. Thank you.
And Doug, your hand.
I haven't looked yet. Is March 27th over spring break, and is that better or worse?
Good point.
That both better or worse for people's schedules if you're traveling with children or whatever over spring break, or better for finding a room and space and parking on campus?
I can check and see if it's campus spring break. And I know that campus and MMSD wanted to sync up the calendars again. And I don't know if that's going to happen this year or next year. Sorry, the computer's going slow here.
So that is spring break for MMSD.
It is. And that is spring break for campus too, the 22nd through the 30th. So would it make sense maybe to move it to April? April and September?
I'll revise that motion just in case people are traveling over that period. Yes. April, September.
And is that okay, Janine, as the seconder?
Yes, it Thank is. You. And I was going to add the dates. You got them. Thank you.
Great. Further discussion. So the motion is to accept the calendar proposed for 2025 with in-person meetings in April and September of 25 on campus. Further discussion. Seeing none, unless there's objection, all those in favor. Well, I just did that in reverse. I'm sorry. Unless there's objection, we'll assume this is approved unless there is a problem. And not seeing any, so the motion passes. Thank you all. Thanks, Ben, for putting that together. So next on the agenda is Legistar 85703-306 North Brooks. Janine, are you going to tee this up, or even though it's not a campus project?
I can just give a real brief introduction.
Thank you.
So this is a project that is kind of within the campus boundary, but on private land. It's something that several meetings ago, the committee had asked for an informational presentation on. The project has, as kind of is noted in the agenda, already been approved by the city. So this is really, like I said, for information, Q&A, and to make the committee aware of kind of some of the details of the project. And so we have Dwayne Johnson here from the project architecture team with Knothi and Bruce. And so I will turn it over to Dwayne, and you should be able to share your screen, Dwayne, if you would like to do that.
Let's see if I can make this even larger. So good evening. My name is Dwayne Johnson. I'm a partner and architect at Knothi and Bruce Architects. I'm here tonight to talk about 306 North Brook Street, which is highlighted here on my screen in yellow. It's on the corner of West Johnson and North Brook Street, and we share the block with Grand Central Apartments and the 1001 Apartments. Both of these are also developed and managed by LZ, who is also developing the proposed Brook Street project. It's hard to speak about this project and not talk about Porchlight's new facility, which will be located on the corner of East Washington and Blair Street. Porchlight is able to receive the new Blair Street project be free and clear because of LZ's development here on Brook Street in the current Porchlight location. In addition to the demolition approval, and we received Plan Commission and Common Council approval in July, as well as a rezone for this property from TRU2 to RMX. And then we had some conditional use approvals at those meetings as well for building height and then a vehicle parking reduction. Here are a couple pictures of the existing Porchlight building. This building was originally built in 1952 as the University YMCA building. The facility has not seen significant updates in quite a few years, and it's become a financial burden for Porchlight to operate and maintain the facility. The 14-story Grand Central can be seen here in the foreground, as well as the 8-story 1001 building here and here. This is our proposed site. We're proposing a 15-story, 182 unit private student housing building. We are incorporating two entrances, one off of North Brook Street and the other off of West Johnson Street. We've also incorporated fairly large setbacks, allowing large areas for landscaping and planters. Conklin is located here as the one way up on the top of the sheet. This is actually a public alleyway. And we're set back 12 feet from that as well, which leaves us room for bike parking and a loading zone. And then in between Grand Central and the proposed building is a private drive. We're accessing 11 or 10 parking stalls off of that private drive. And as well, that's where we enter into our parking garage. You can see here in the footprint, we step back above the fifth story on all sides of the building. Here are a couple of our floor plans. We have 2.5 levels of underground parking. Again, it's accessed right off of here, off the private alleyway, and then it kind of spirals down as you work down the 2.5 levels. We're able to achieve 117 automobile parking stalls with the 2.5 levels. And then we're using the corners where we can't park as bike parking and some of the mechanical type functions as well. The first floor plan, you can see the main entry off of Johnson here. It's recessed back with a plaza area, and then the Brook Street entrance is over here on the right. All the green areas are different amenity functions. These are kind of still being programmed, but we're anticipating a lot of study type areas, a large fitness area, which would actually be shared between this property and Grand Central and 1001 as well. As we move up the building, it's a mix of studio through five bedrooms. You can see here on the sixth floor, we step back that 10-ish feet on all sides of the building. And then that floor plate continues up 12 through 14. And then on the 15th story, we change the unit mix a little bit. And then we introduce this library area, which would also have a small terrace, which would kind of look towards the Capitol, kind of a quiet terrace type area. Here's one of the renderings we put together. Our architecture is an Art Deco inspired styling. The building's materials are a mix of precast, brick and metal panels in two different tones of color. The building stature is similar in nature to its neighboring Grand Central. The step back that I had discussed earlier creates a point of departure for the verticality of the upper stories. This verticality is accentuated by the use of precast monument or ornamental fins protruding from the darker window system. Here's another, more of a street view. This is positioned near the Educational Sciences Building, which is visible to the left of the foreground. The enlarged public setback and 12-foot building step back create space for wider, or I'm sorry, the 12-foot step back you can see here, or setback you can see, creating the landscaped areas that I mentioned with a different assortment of planters. And then you can see the building setback above the fifth story. Here's one more of a bird's eye view. Looking across Johnson, you can see in the foreground the Grand Central Apartments and then the proposed building here. We are really excited about this project and the opportunity that it brings to Porchlight and to the campus area. We feel it'll provide a unique opportunity for student housing right in the heart of campus. I'm grateful for your guys' interest and the time to introduce it to you. Thank you.
Thanks much, Duane. I've got numerous questions, but I'll let other members go first, so I'm not going on. So, any questions? And Doug.
Yeah, a couple of quick questions on bike parking. On the northeast corner exterior, there's a handful of bike spots. Is there a door adjacent to that where it's quick in and quick out? Yes, up in the northeast corner. Keep going.
Yeah,
10 bike stalls.
this
So there's a
guy
door right
here.
there.
Yeah, there's an entrance right there,
Got
which,
it.
gosh.
And is that covered at all? Covered bike, or is that all exposed?
These are all exposed, and those are only exposed on the site. Everything else, once you get into the building, is all obviously covered inside the building.
And it looks like a lot of bike spots underneath. Do you have a count?
Yeah, I do. I think it's 200 and I think 67 total bikes, and there aren't too many out on the site at the 43. And then we have some, the floor mounted ones kind of scattered around near all of the entrances. So the vast majority of them are within the building, or the majority, I guess, not vast, right?
Great, thanks.
So I'm not seeing any of the hands up, so I will jump in. How many beds then? When you say apartments, but so an example, the five bedroom, that could be 10 people.
Sure. So, yeah, I apologize for not ma mentioning that. We have 512 bedrooms. So if we add up all the unit types, we have 512 bedrooms.
So bedrooms, then you can multiply that by two, except for the studios, possibly.
I am not quite sure how that works with how many people can dwell within each bedroom.
Okay. And then any affordable housing in this complex?
There are not. It's all student housing and not affordable student housing. We're not
Okay.
taking any money for affordable housing, right?
Okay. Any other questions from people? And Janine.
Thank you. Forgive me, you mentioned this, but Yeah, and then we have Gabe and Hayden on the call here, but I'm curious about the timing. Please remind me the start of construction planned and the duration. Thank you.
Right. Yeah, great question, Janine, and apologies for not mentioning that. So Porch Light is not going to go without a home. So we're diligently working on Porch Light right now. We're hoping to start construction on the new Porch Light on the corner of Blair and East Washington here within the next couple of weeks. That's a little under a year long project. So about this time, maybe a little bit sooner. So fall of next year, we would be hoping to move Porch Light to their new facility. And then the project in front of you would at that time be demolished and the construction of Brook Street would start. It's about an 18 month long project. So that would have us open by the summer of 27 for the 27th school year.
Thank you.
And will there be any staging on Brooks that would be a problem with traffic getting into the Granger ramp?
That is a great question. We have not chosen our general contractor yet, and usually they help us out with the logistic plans, and then we work with the city on what streets can and can't be closed in part. So we really haven't had those conversations yet, but the city would be intimately involved in that, those questions and what we're allowed to do for that. So until we have a general contractor, it's hard for us as architects to even request anything of street closure, partial or full.
Great. Thank you so much. Any other questions for Duane? Not seeing any. So thank you so much for your time this evening. And it looks like a great project.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you, everybody.
Moving on, Legistar 85705, the law school, fifth floor renovation.
We do have registrants for this item, and I believe they're all either from the UW or the project team. So perhaps I can just go right through those before the presenters get started. We have Keith Grabarczyk, hopefully I'm pronouncing that correctly, with Ramlow Stein. Scott Ramlow, representing UW-Madison, Ramlow Stein. Kathleen Ferrero with Psyche Design. JC Chart. No registration, but looks like the same address as Ramlow. All registered in support and registered to speak. And then Scott Utter, available to answer questions with UW-Madison.
Thank you. Janine, are you taking this one? Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chair. So I'll give a very quick overview of the project, where it's at in the process, and then an expected timeline. And then I'll let the team present the project for you. So this is an informational presentation, first time that this group is seeing this study. So this is a study for the law school fifth floor project. And essentially, the law school leadership team worked with Ramlow Stein to develop a pre-design report for a proposed fifth floor renovation and terrace, including about a 7,900 gross square foot remodel, 3,200 square foot addition, and new 2,400 square foot outdoor terrace. The pre-design plan provides a proposed scope, schedule, and budget, for the fifth floor leadership suite. So this is a study. This is not a full project yet. The DRB saw this project in September at their September 17th meeting. And when it becomes a project in the future, it will follow the standard entitlement process. So that's where it's been. That's where it's going. And with that, I will hand it over to Scott and or the team.
Thank you, Janine. I'll be covering for Scott this evening, and I will share my screen here. All right. Are you able to see my screen? Perfect. Okay. Well, thank you, everyone, for having us today and to go over this project for the UW Law School fifth floor renovation and terrace. As Janine mentioned, we on our team, we have JC Chart, who's the interior designer for this project. And then we also have Kathleen Ferrero from Psyche Design, who will highlight some of the exterior kind of terrace items. All right, I will advance here. Okay, so the UW Law School fifth floor renovation and terrace pre-design study is located at the existing UW Law School, which is located right off of Bascom Hill. You'll see our highlighted area, which includes the fifth floor remodel, and then the solid red box is where the exterior terrace would be proposed. Project description, high level, the University of Wisconsin-Madison Law School, located at Bascom Mall, is part of the Bascom Hill Historic District, which is on the National and State Register of Historic Places. The UW Law School fifth floor renovation and terrace pre-design plan is intended to develop scope, budget for the fifth floor leadership suite and to create more efficient workspaces for staff, better connectivity between leadership and administration spaces, as well as faculty workspaces to meet future growth, and also create a place where students and faculty can collaborate and gather. The law school is defined, as Janine mentioned, you know, these as critical kind of program requirements to better serve students and staff and create a place where all can collaborate. As mentioned, the remodel is just about 7,900 square feet. The addition will be roughly 3,237 square feet, spread between a lower level basement, fifth floor conference space, and my apologies, and a connector stair going up to the sixth floor. The terrace will roughly be 2,400 square feet, which will be right off of the proposed addition. Have a few project goals here, kind of some of the high level ones that we're really focused on is, you know, create an engaging space for students and faculty to utilize and congregate. One of the current kind of deficiencies within the building is off of the Bascom Hill entry. The welcome desk is located within the fifth floor. It's really hard for people visiting the building and the law school to kind of find this. So one thing that we're looking to do is kind of create better visibility to this welcome desk. And by doing that, we're going to shift it over kind of towards the large kind of volume atrium and provide a little bit more glazing and wayfinding to assist and greet guests and prospective students. Our goal is to design a space that positively showcases the department to visitors and prospective students. This is a space that will kind of be one of the main stops on a tour for a prospective student. And so this is really kind of an opportunity to show them collaboration between the faculty and the students within this space. This is a space that we intend that students could use in off hours, and we're still working through how, you know, that is kind of blocked off. One of the goals was to design a dynamic space to show activity and collaboration, as mentioned. And then really, you know, creating the spaces to help design with faculty retention and increase student recruitment in mind. For the program, it consists of several different departments. We have the information reception, as I mentioned, student affairs, academic affairs, administration, student success, and academic enhancement. And it, as you can see, these are really departments that are student and academic focused. So being able to create more open space in the suite and adding addition really helps connect students and faculty and creates a space for them to collaborate. And you'll see also in the support space that that's really kind of our addition and pre-function conference room space that we'll review. Project schedule. We believe this is roughly a 7-month design process with 1 month of bidding and 18 months of construction, resulting in 26 months schedule total project. And then budget, we're looking at roughly around $8 million, just a little bit over. On the campus map, taken from the campus master plan, you'll see with the star here by the number 6, we're located in the historic campus neighborhood. In context, as I mentioned, we're off of Bascom Hill. The yellow highlights really kind of a high level of pedestrian circulation that happens. The north side is one entrance that gets you into the main atrium of law school, and then there's also kind of another main entry off of the south, Lathrop Drive. There is vehicular circulation here, but this is really kind of a secondary kind of access. As far as some of the buildings that are adjacent to us, we have South Hall here highlighted in G, Burge Hall, which is to the southwest, and then really kind of our big context for this project is the existing law school and the additions that were added over time. All right, some imagery of the existing building. The four left images are really where our project is located. This lower portion where my cursor is, where you're kind of seeing this dark stone, that's the fifth floor of the law school. It actually jogs up to the right here, where my cursor is also highlighted, to kind of a level 5.1, as I call it. So this building kind of has varying levels, even in between the suite floor. This is our proposed terrace area. You'll see that on this addition, we have a composition of brick, stone, and then also vertical kind of concrete pier elements, and then metal panel on the existing mechanical. On the east side, or sorry, on the right side here, these two images, this is of the Bascom Hill entry, and this is the 1990s edition that was added. You'll see it's a little bit more glassy and modern. There is a stone element on the base there that also wraps to the 1960s portion, which is our building. We're proposing that from this existing door to kind of wrap that where our addition doesn't cover to better connect the two sides. And again, here's just kind of an overall of the context of the campus master plan and where our project site is located in relationship to that. And then I will hand it over to Kathleen to go over a little bit more on accessible routes, as well as kind of some of the site design.
Thanks, Keith. So this slide, again, is just showing a little bit more context for the law school addition and adjacent patio. As part of this study, we did investigate some of the accessible routes adjacent to this site that are highlighted in the green. Those are more considered gently sloped routes, up to 6%. And then those yellow routes that are kind of adjacent to our site are moderately sloped routes, paved routes, from 6 to 9%. So really this is to illustrate that currently there's virtually no access directly to this building addition and patio where they're planned for currently. So part of this study was working with the law school and trying to evaluate the best way to get people down to this patio who are, without having to go through the building. Next slide, please. And then this is just a quick slide showing some of the site conditions as they are currently. We do have a series of egress stairs around the building, one kind of in the northeast corner, and then a couple of stairwells to the south that are highlighted there that were in some photos in a couple of previous slides. We do have several mature trees on this site. And you'll see that we highlighted here that in order to build the building addition along with the patio, it will require the removal of three of these trees. We've got two species of birch and one American beech, which we'll get into the details of this in a couple of slides down in the presentation. We've also got about 13 feet of grade change sloping down toward the building, some existing culverts, an existing drainage swale that flows out into an existing catch basin kind of on the south edge of the building. So, being mindful of the grade challenges in this site as well, as part of this study. Next slide, please. Just wanted to touch on construction access. It's, in addition to pedestrian access to this space, we want to be mindful even in this stage of pre-design of how we might actually access this site to be able to build the building addition and the patio. So And we'd like to do that in a way that is least impactful to the surrounding trees that we're trying to preserve. So trying to utilize routes that already exist, like coming up along Lathrop Drive and coming up Lincoln Drive, coming down that existing sidewalk and into the site. This is we're planning to create a sidewalk here to allow for access to the building and the patio in this area. So using that route for construction access, because we're going to be building on it anyway as part of the project, trying to be mindful of, you know, how all of that works together and how we can limit the impact to these mature trees in the area that we want to preserve. Next slide, please. So this is a rendering of the building addition with the proposed patio. When we held several meetings with the law school to kind of understand capacity needs and kind of how they wanted to utilize this space, and they told us that they wanted to be able to use it to entertain about 40 groups of up to 40, and that could be small classes, it could be like alumni events, things like that out on this space. So we sized the patio according to that request. And as Keith, if you could go to the next slide, that's got a few annotations on it to kind of just explain what's shown on the rendering. In terms of materiality, you know, because this is in a historic district, we want to be mindful of the existing materials, a lot of that kind of limestone and fieldstone that you see in this area. So we are proposing, as you kind of along the perimeter of the patio, a seat wall that's about 18 inches high on the patio side, one to kind of serve as like a little bit of an enclosure and buffer to kind of separate this space from, you know, and help it kind of feel nestled into what's around it, but also provide some additional seating besides the movable tables and chairs that you see kind of drawn in this rendering. And the law school, you know, we kind of talked about the type and quality of the furnishings out here. So we are proposing, you know, fully movable furniture that's got a little bit more of an elevated aesthetic to it so that they can, you know, keep the space really flexible and able to move things around. Also, something I wanted to touch on, because we are, you know, we're talking about taking out some existing trees here. We are proposing three new canopy trees in the patio. We're proposing them in a tree grate and using you know, soil vaults or some sort of system underneath to help promote root growth and survivability of these new trees. And also, you know, eventually they would grow in and provide kind of a new overhead canopy space to the patio. We're also proposing a couple of inlets in here as well, given the grade challenges of the site. And we are, you know, up against the building with this patio as well. And being able to, you know, route that out underneath the patio and, you know, southeast around the building, and help direct some of that water. We're also showing, you know, a kind of a planted swale bordering this patio space, and using a lot of native woodland species of plantings, kind of in keeping with the existing aesthetics of this area of campus. Got a lot of you know, kind of mature tree species. It kind of lends itself to this kind of more woodland feel. So we do plan on kind of sticking with that same planting aesthetic in the patio. And because this patio space does touch you know, each side of the building, we will need a series of steps, a series of stairs down to the patio from that southern entrance. It's kind of shown in gray there, kind of at the southern edge of the patio, at that end. But on the northern side, it would come out from the new addition entrance come out directly onto the patio. Additionally, to help with stormwater, we are proposing permeable pavers out here as the surface of the patio, and plan on using kind of sticking in that warm color family to tie in with all of the adjacent materials on site as well. Next slide, please, Keith. Again, this is just showing kind of some concept images to illustrate some of the materials we're talking about. Those integrated tree grates in the patio, that's bubble number one. That image is a little deceiving in that it's showing like a cool toned gray color for the pavers. That's not quite what we're proposing here. We want to stay more in that warm color family, but that's more just to illustrate the idea of the trees and the grates in the patio. Again, as I mentioned earlier, limestone seat walls kind of surrounding the patio in bubble number two. Bubble number three, we're calling kind of like an entrance element, like kind of a limestone veneer column, or some sort of kind of gateway feature that the law school could, you know, use as a potential donor opportunity, whether it's with signage or some sort of archway or, you know, some kind of plaque there, rather than, doing like a donor paver, that wasn't quite as favored, by the law school. So we thought that this would be kind of a nice alternative, for something like that. And then, bubble number four, we've got another egress door in that lower corner of the site, that sits a little bit lower than the patio. So we're, proposing a series of like kind of stone steppers through that area and kind of planting it with a little bit more of a kind of a woodland aesthetic, in that corner, in order before you kind of come up to the patio level. I mentioned earlier about some of the existing trees on site. So I just wanted to touch on that a little bit, because I know that we are dealing with some mature trees here that will be impacted by, you know, any amount of construction that happens here in this corner of campus. So the two paper bark birch trees, one paper bark birch, one yellow birch that Keith is highlighting right now, those two trees would be impacted by a building addition. And those are, you know, two of the smaller trees in this area. And as far as the rest of these trees here that we're trying to preserve, we wanna be mindful of the critical root zones of these trees and the root plate zones of these trees. So in order to really make sure that we have the best chance of survival for these existing trees on site, we wanna make sure we're preserving at least 50% of that critical root zone and 100% of that root plate zone. So those really large light gray circles are the critical root zones of these existing trees. And then those smaller darker gray circles are the root plate zones of these trees. And then the third tree that we would need to remove as part of this project would be that American beech tree. It's got a 21 inch caliper. And this tree, you know, based on the requests from the law school for how much space they felt they needed to accomplish their goals and what they wanted this terrace to be. And then also we did receive a report from UW, where they actually did an assessment of these existing trees here at the law school, and kind of talked about, gave a little bit more detail on their condition and their value and their species and all of that information. And that in conjunction with, you know, us being on site, we felt that if we had to, you know, if we were going to remove another tree in order to create this terrace, that beech tree, it was noted as in fair condition, verging on poor, whereas all of the other mature trees on this site were noted as being in, you know, good health or excellent health, so we certainly would want to preserve all of those remaining trees. So I just wanted to kind of give a little bit of background on that decision and kind of where it came from.
Thank you, Kathleen. All right, so for just the last couple slides here, we'll go over the proposed floor plans. So this is really the main floor plan here. This is the fifth floor that we talked about. To the north here, and you're seeing this stair, this is where you would enter off of Bascom Hill, up these stairs to the fifth floor. And currently the main reception desk is kind of where my cursor is highlighted back here. We'd be proposing to move that up and create glazing there in order to have better sight lines and visibility to that main reception desk. As you enter in, you would be greeted. The dean's suite is to the north. There would be a larger graphic here that would kind of draw you in. There is breakout spaces in between some of these offices that students would be visiting. And then kind of progressing through to the south here, this is our addition area. This would kind of be an extension of the outdoor terrace for the winter months that it could accommodate roughly 40 people. There would be another conference room added. There currently is kind of a deficiency of conference rooms within the building, so that gives the law school kind of another asset there. To the east here, we have additional offices. This is actually 4 feet higher than the main level of the fifth floor. The pre-function space would be at the same level as to the north here. So what we'd propose is to have a connecting stair between the main level five, the level five, which is 4 feet higher, and then ultimately the sixth floor, which is where my cursor is highlighted, where admissions is. So this really provides the law school kind of connectivity between all these spaces that they really desire. We'd also be proposing a green roof up on this level, as well as there'd be a roof monitor kind of bringing light into the addition. In conversations with UW, one thing that was identified that there kind of currently is a lack of mechanical space right to the north here. And the existing 1960s building isn't sprinklered. There is certain infrastructure that we'd have to bring in that they would need additional space for. So we'd be creating a basement level for future mechanical expansion that any floors would kind of require. In addition, we'd be creating an egress stair since the main egress is kind of coming to the north here, and we are taking out an exterior stair, and that would bring us to the patio. Quickly on sustainability, we've met with the UW Sustainability Department. Some of the big things that we're addressing here is mother's rooms, bringing in native vegetation, as Kathleen mentioned, the green roof. We'd be looking into energy modeling for this project, focus on energy reporting, commissioning, making this project solar ready in the event that we don't go ahead with a green roof, but that this project could accommodate solar, and then also life cycle cost analysis. As far as the exterior, as mentioned, the addition here is where my cursor is highlighted. What we'd be doing is bringing in kind of some of the elements of the existing building. We'd be wrapping some of the north kind of stone onto the addition, as well as the seat wall that Kathleen highlighted. The addition primarily would be pretty glassy in order to kind of create an indoor-outdoor space as far as the landscape. We'd also bring some of the kind of coping material to match the existing metal panel in the mechanical penthouse, as well as you're seeing here vertical kind of concrete elements that match the existing 60s building. This kind of wavy structure you're seeing up here is the connector stair between the sixth and fifth floor. I will now hand it off to JC to just quickly go over kind of some of the interior images.
Thanks, Keith. Yeah, so this is an interior rendering of if you came in through the front doors, if you entered the building from Bascom Hill. So showing that proposed waiting and information desk area and lobby. It's an inviting entry. The information desk, like Keith said, is pulled up to the front. It's right there when you enter. So someone will greet you and lead you through the space. There's also a lot of opportunity for signage and branding and graphics that also pull you into the space. The finished palette's going to complement the sixth floor admin spaces that were just recently upgraded. We're also going to expose the columns because in the atrium space and throughout the law building, they are exposed and we're going to match that paint. So we're going to bring that design element into this law suite. And then we're going to add new furnishings that are welcoming with soft seating that's complementary to the aesthetic. We're also going to add some LED lighting throughout the space, and we'd like to incorporate some plants for that biophilic element. This next interior rendering is of the addition. So if you were out on the terrace and you walk through the doors, this is kind of the view you would have into the addition. This also is the pre-function space, conference room space to your left. You're kind of peeking in that new large conference space, but also a great space for events, throwing events, and for students to study and collaborate with faculty. On the ceiling, you're going to see some acoustical wall slats with LED incorporated. Again, the finished palette's going to complement that sixth floor upgrades that were recently done, again, exposing the columns. You're going to see a lot of natural light in this space from that terrace exterior wall, but also adding a skylight for additional daylight. There's a great opportunity for that feature wall, whether that's branding, donor recognition, or history. We're also going to keep that existing exterior brick as we build next to the existing building with the addition. And then to finish off the space, we're going to have a resilient wood grain plank flooring. And this rendering just does a great job of highlighting that connecting stairs that Keith touched on as well. So this is the rendering of the addition space.
Thank you, JC. That concludes our presentation. I appreciate everyone taking the time to let us present. Thank you.
Thanks so much. Questions from members? Not seeing any. Okay, well, thank you so much for your informational presentation here this evening. And we look forward to the, as it progresses, to have updates. So moving on to Legistar 85704, Lakeshore Path Lighting and Paving Study.
We do have some registrants for this one as well, I believe, all from the project team. Samantha Farrell Folger, registered support and to speak from Damon Farber. Jean Garbarini, I
right.
believe. registered in support to speak. Holly Blomquist, neither supporting nor opposing, registered to speak with Ring and Du Chateau Consulting. Oh, looks like Holly is registered twice.
Accidentally said I didn't want to speak the first time.
Okay. Those are our registrants.
Great. Thank you so much. And Janine or Gabe, are you introducing this, or?
Gabe, I'm happy to give a quick overview, and then I'll let you add anything you would like to it. That sounds good.
Yep. That works.
Awesome. Excellent. So this is also an informational presentation. And I believe this is a study for the Lakeshore Path, looking at potential for lighting and paving. So you've already heard the team members that will give a brief presentation on the project. The UW Transportation and Lakeshore Nature Preserve team have been working with consultants, Damon Farber, excuse me, to develop a study on potential safety and accessibility improvements to the Howard Timmon UW Lakeshore Path section running from Willow Creek, say that three times, to Limnology Building. So this study has been taking place for a couple of months, and here we are in October with a Joint Campus Area Committee introduction. They'll talk more about the public meeting that will take place on November 6th, and in the future it would go to Design Review Board. And I believe they're looking to complete this study by the end of this year, but I'll let Gabe say anything he would like, and then we'll hand it off to the team.
Thank you, Jeannie. We do plan, after the report is finished, to also share this with UW Shared Governance groups as well as Transportation Commission. And then if this gets approved for a project during the design process, we'll meet with everybody as we normally would, Joint Campus, DRB, and we'll also include Transportation Commission, hopefully to get an advisory recommendation. So that's what I've got.
Sounds good. I will share my screen and get this to full screen so everybody can see it nice and big. All right, Jean.
Okay.
Well, thank you everyone for having us participate in tonight's agenda. I'm Jean Garbarini with Damon Farber Landscape Architects. I'm a principal with the firm, and you've heard Samantha Farrell's with us, also part of my team at Damon Farber. And then we also have Holly Bloomquist with us to talk to you about the lighting study that we're doing, and Holly's with Ring and Duchateau. So you heard a description of this project from Janine. Tonight we're going to talk about, we've done team introductions. We're going to give you information on the schedule, do some analysis overview, tell you some information about what we heard in our first round of engagement. We will share our research findings and evaluation, and then we'll look at some lighting options and talk about our next steps for the project. Most of you are familiar with this project. As Janine mentioned, it goes from Willow Creek to Limnology on the UW campus. You can see it here in the yellow line. It's our trail segment. And our team, you can see here, you can see also the Department of Administration project manager, and then our UW-Madison project advisors, in addition to the people who will be speaking today. And quickly, our schedule, we started in June and we will wrap up in December. And you can see the different phases of work that we've been going through illustrated on the left-hand side of this schedule. We've had one significant stakeholder engagement event, and we're about to engage in further stakeholder events coming up in the next month.
So in our first round of engagement, we had presented these level of analysis maps looking at cultural resources, path circulation, erosion, that was noted an important part of the study by the UW team, path surfacing and width, as well as lighting quality and vegetative quality. A lot of these elements were pulled from previous master plans, some of our on the ground research, observing the path. And then really we wanted to start to pull a lot of that in from the engagement process. So while we presented this as an initial finding of analysis, we wanted to layer in a lot of the what we heard from the public. So that took the form of an online survey, a public information meeting, which was hosted back in July, as Jean mentioned, and then some stakeholder meetings with different UW groups. So combined, we have over 11,000 insights from that, which was great. We were able to get a lot of input from the community and various levels, and we were able to start to pull out common themes from those elements. The common themes are noted below, and we started to hear a little bit about the usership of the path, the importance of the nature and aesthetics of the path, and then maintenance as well. So, excuse me, the engagement summary, this is just a snapshot of what the online GIS map looked like. We asked people to start to geolocate their comments so that we could understand where different observations were happening, whether it was a safety issue or an important wildlife natural resource feature, as well as lighting issues and observations, stormwater and erosion flooding. We were able to start to find some patterns within this overall system so that we could interpret this level of analysis and really form our research and then our eventual options based on the findings and context of the map provided by all UW staff, public, students, a wide range of users. And so as we started to parse through this information, a big comment that we saw from the survey itself was no concerns, keep as is. We definitely understand that this is a well-loved path. Also coming through was usership, some of the user conflicts, user safety, and inclusivity, accessibility. Because these comments and findings were so layered, we started to group them into the different buckets. So the no concern, keep as is was pretty straightforward. The usership started to layer in the safety and user conflict concerns. And the nature aesthetic was starting to look at the natural resources, ecosystems, some of the erosion comments, wildlife comments as well, where there was some nice wildlife observations observed for important flora and fauna noted, and then really the natural aesthetic and experience that people so love, and talking about some of the lighting comments as well in there. We did mention and have some notes for construction and maintenance, and we'll continue to work with UW on a lot of those concerns as that is a big part of their purview. So as that pushed into the next phase, we used all of those elements to frame our research. Within the research, we had 12 paving types that we were studying, as well as three different lighting strategies, as well as controls. These were through the lens of the Wisconsin DOT, as well as campus standards, the Illumination Engineering Society, and International Dark Skies. And then we didn't run a formal WEPA analysis, but we used it to frame this level of research too. So how would it be impacted with natural resources, what the water quality starts to look like for any of these surfacing options, winter management, as well as user safety and experience and operations. And lighting started to pull some of those WEPA concerns in as well, in the form of cultural impacts, social impacts, and economic impacts, all with the environmental lens on top of it. So as we began to look at the map for surfacing and look at these evaluations through the lens of the engagement, as well as some of our research, we started to pull out different zones of the map. There's been a lot of studies in the past where it's suggested to pave this section of the path, and we recognize that there's different concerns and comments and priorities, key priorities that are starting to come through in these different zones. So the zones were started to establish based on the neighborhoods, which is the UW campus framework. So there's the Lakeshore neighborhood, which is really the Lakeshore dorms. It becomes a much more dense level of human usership and development. And then the recreation neighborhoods that are in green, bookend the path at Muir Woods, and then just outside of the Bakke. We also recognize some of the contextual elements of the existing surface typologies. So limestone screenings were along Muir Woods and just west of Porter Boathouse, while most of the western edge of the path was already in asphalt. I think a couple of our exceptions are Porter Boathouse with concrete, and there's a tight spot at Chamberlain. So these two lenses, the context of the existing materiality as well as the neighborhood, started to create these zones. Recreation Neighborhood 1, Lakeshore Neighborhood 1, LN2, LN3, RN1. And that's where we started to group the key priorities that we heard from the engagement. So that starts to, I think the one that we really wanted to hit on was Muir Woods, where we heard a lot of environmental concerns, erosion, safety, and user conflict. And so that's where we really wanted to have a context-specific approach for our evaluation and how we were going to bring options forward. We looked at a few different case studies within the area, Pheasant Branch Nature Conservancy, just nearby, Chicago's 606 or Bloomingdale Trail, as well as a few others that looked at different types of materiality. So one in Wellesley, Massachusetts had a bound aggregate. And we wanted to focus on a variety of materials. As we mentioned, 12 were studied, but really looking at the usership per day and how we can start to apply that level of the different experiences, whether it's a natural aesthetic or something that's a little bit more developed, and how that can be brought into the different zones of the overall path section that we're studying itself. We also looked at safety controls, recognizing that there's some layer of signage, marking and striping, curbs and edges that can start to help the erosion, start to suggest where people are utilizing the path, slow different constituency groups down, whether it's wheeled or walking, and look at how we can develop a section of path that is safer for all users while still maintaining a lot of the things that people love today. So heading into the surfacing options, we have the existing surface noted just on the path itself with the asphalt, limestone screenings, and concrete. And then we start to break down the different types of options just above that. So option one looks to break it into two sections of permeable asphalt with a poured-in-place running strip shoulder, as well as a curb to control those edges. And then within the RN3 neighborhood, which is tied to the Muir Woods experience, a boardwalk with striping for some of the natural experiences and nature prioritization that we had talked about. Looking at option two, that is as an asphalt condition in most of the western edge of the path, recognizing that a good portion of the western path is already asphalt, and trying to create less transitions in that space to make it a safer condition. And then headed over into the Muir Woods section for RN3 is a bonded aggregate with curbing and striping, which has a similar aesthetic to the current limestone screenings, but is a little bit of a more solid surface for less movement, and the curbing and striping creates those controls that we had talked about for safety. Option one, this is just starting to show what that could look like in the permeable asphalt section, where we would have that shoulder, where we would have the stripes and the permeable asphalt. Some of those conditions happen today where it's striped. We would suggest it along that full section so that there is the control. And then within the boardwalk piece over at RN3, it would have the striping and signage for controls. We have also been in discussions with UW about a railing on one side. I think it's important to note that this is all still preliminary options and findings. So this is what we're working through with the UW team, and then we'll have opportunities for feedback from you all, the public information session, and then we'll bring it to the DRB. But the final findings will be at the end of December. Looking to option two, this is more of the standard asphalt and then the bonded aggregate on the eastern side. So this was going to the options of no concerns, keep as is, where we're trying to maintain a lot of that continuity of the existing materialities, but take it up a level because there are some safety and erosion comments that we felt were worth addressing with the materiality and the profile of the path. And that was achieved both with the shoulder curb as well as the striping on the western edge of the path, and then the curb with the bonded aggregate as well as the striping on the eastern end.
And then from a lighting standpoint, we are using the guidelines, as Samantha mentioned, of International Dark Sky, as well as the Illuminating Engineering Society, and looking at those reference standards and recommendations within the neighborhood framework of this specific site. And we reviewed lighting options through not only the direction that Damon Farber is heading in terms of the paving definitions, but also through the lens of light zones as they relate to the neighborhood framework. And the light zones are definitions that are part of the joint model lighting ordinance that's published by the Illuminating Engineering Society and the Dark Sky Association. So a light zone zero, which you would see in the area adjacent to Muir Woods, is sort of the darkest condition. And light zone one, it would be considered like a light level of development. And that's really the area that's more adjacent to the dorms. So for illumination, we're addressing illumination for visual assurance and aesthetics, as well as respect for wildlife and dark sky. Solutions we anticipate to include a blend of new lighting, as well as replacing existing lighting that is not currently in compliance with the light zone definitions to more appropriately illuminate the area as needed. This would include options for products that have optical controls that would reduce glare and eliminate light spill, certainly into areas of concern, which include the woods and the lake. We would look for products that have appropriate warm color quality, which is shown to reduce nighttime disturbance. And we're also, as Sam mentioned, looking at not only lighting products, but also a level of other controls to reduce lighting when it's not needed. And that would be in the form of possibly occupant sensing to dim lights when people aren't around, or even potentially curfews to extinguish lights when areas are in very low use. So that's the direction that we're looking at currently.
Thanks, Sally. And just to have our, sorry, there's a little bit of a lag here, but The next steps are that we will present this at the public information session coming up on November 6th that we're hosting it at the Holt Center. We will also be having our continued partnerships with UW Meeting, student-centric session, a campus partners, and Lakeshore Nature Preserve session happening the following week. And then Design Review Board will be in the middle of the December, which is the last one for the year. With all that, we'll pull it together and have our final report issued to UW by December 31st. Thank you.
Thanks so much for your presentation. Any questions from members? And Robbie, and then Mark.
So I just want to confirm your recommendations right now for the eastern end are either a boardwalk or a bonded aggregate. That's what you're recommending?
Those are the two options that we're currently presenting to the public, correct? Yep.
Okay. That's great. I mean, and then there's going to be, you're also recommending some level of lighting in that area as well. I mean, it might be very low lighting, but there is some recommendation for lighting.
That's correct. Yep. We're looking at that through the lens of the light zones as defined. So zone zero is the sort of least amount of light that we would look at. But yes, it would be something appropriate to the area to give even just a minimal sense of wayfinding.
Okay. The boardwalk, I'm wondering what the conditions are when it's either wet or a freeze and thaw, because having used this path for 8 years as an employee and 30 years as a resident of the area, my biggest concern is being able to, the winter conditions, especially at the eastern end, because it is a north-facing slope and it's extremely poor conditions. So it's pretty much unusable for many months of the year. And freezing and thawing creates puddles, ice, ruts, all kinds of things. And I'm just wondering, I mean, I sort of understand how the aggregate works, but I'm wondering how the boardwalk would work when it's wet or slippery.
Yep, I think that's a great question. So with some of the study of the surfacing and materiality, we're going to continue that into December. There's a few different conditions in the area. Pheasant Branch was a good study that they have the different strips on the boardwalk itself that are grippier and allow for a different surfacing that is less slick when it's wet. So that's one thing that we would look into with UW. In terms of the maintenance, we've talked about the snow clearing needing some type of brush, which I think already starts to happen in parts of this path. And I think the third thing to make mention of, because the boardwalk would be proud of the surface, it would have less surface runoff and it would just be the snow that falls directly onto the path. So with that, it would be less of the stormwater and erosion happening on that surface and just the snow that is falling directly onto the path that the UW would need to maintain on a semi-frequent basis, which I believe they do already. So those are some of the things that we've talked about today.
Okay. So the boardwalk would basically allow drainage.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. They would still have those spacing in between the boards and then the materiality, whether it's a composite or a natural wood, and whether there's another piece affixed to that is something that we would continue to study with UW.
Okay. I think that'll improve things considerably. And then the bonded aggregate is actually like a hard surface, which wouldn't rut. Is that right?
Correct. Yeah. There's one option that we were looking at that was permeable, one that was not. So There's a composite with shown on the left-hand side that has the aggregate product as well as some other binders that allows some porosity. And then there's the wax bonded aggregate that was another one that we were looking at that is not porous, but both of them are stabilized to the point where you will need to have maintenance certainly throughout the years, but will not have the same level of maintenance or erosion or rutting as the current surface.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Next is Mark and then Doug following.
Thank you, Mary. I just wanted to say thank you for the presentation. I can tell that a lot of people have done a lot of work on this, and I'm impressed. Certainly not easy, but it seems like you've got some really good thoughts and background and research. So thank you.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Welcome.
And Doug, you're up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks also for the presentation. Yeah, these are some fantastic ideas. I run this path on a regular basis into the late fall and starting in early spring, maybe not all winter, but sometimes often early in the morning and often even below freezing. And I just want to express concern about the boardwalk being next to the lake where it's somewhat humid. And once the temperature drops below freezing, that being susceptible to getting a pretty good layer of frost on it, making it pretty slippery early in the morning. So I wanted you to at least take that into consideration when choosing a surface for that eastern portion. And also along the lines of what Robbie said about the conditions there and snow removal and snow melting, a darker surface, the aggregate looks very nice. I don't know if there's a darker option of that that would absorb more sunlight, the little that it may get there, and allow for faster melting. So just some items to consider.
Great. Thank you. I appreciate that feedback.
Any other questions? And I'm not seeing any. Thanks for your time this evening and your great presentation. We look forward to it, the next iteration when it advances.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Moving on to discussion item, Legistar 51256. Is that Scott or Janine?
We are happy to answer any questions about projects, but I won't go through it unless there's something specific you want to hear about.
Any comments from members then? Okay, we'll move on then to Legistar 66581. And I'm guessing that's Mike.
I believe that is me, Madam Chair, with projects from UW Health. I can do the same. There's only two in our revised list that remain active. One is the improvements with our emergency department, which is happening within the confines of the existing parking structure and emergency department. So it's not really even visible from the street outside. That work is continuing and will continue through the balance of next year. One I do want to share with the committee, though, an update is the D2 module addition. We did complete our reviews and conversations with the Campus Design Review Board, and there are mock-ups on the site, full-scale mock-ups. Mr. Imes will be updating you and the Village Board on some of the progress with that as well. But the important activity that's going to take place starting tomorrow and over the weekend will be the installation of the tower crane for construction. That crane is being set on a foundation pad that's part of the building addition. So it's back in behind the Medical Foundation Centennial Building and the Children's Hospital. But the process of getting the components of that crane in and out are going to require some coordination with campus traffic, access in and out while those components are set. It will be about a 12 to 13 story tower crane that will allow and facilitate the eventual installation and erection of the building superstructure, which is going to start to follow soon hereafter. But that's really all I have. Happy to share. I've got a diagram of where the crane is going. If the committee wants to see that, I could share my screen and I'll let everybody see that if they're so inclined.
Why don't you just do that quick? That way,
all right,
can see it. And
Ben, I presume I have permission to share my screen.
Yeah, you should be able to share.
So hopefully you all are seeing an aerial diagram with notes on it. So the Medical Foundation Centennial Building is that building there, kind of in the upper left-hand quadrant. You see University Bay Drive peeling off from Highland on the upper right-hand quadrant. The area is shaded in red. Towards the middle and bottom of the screen are the construction site activities, and the green square, bright green square, is the location of the tower crane. So the tower crane, they'll be coming in pieces on semi-tractor trailers. They'll be coming up University Bay Drive from University Avenue. We will have our flaggers and other folks coordinating. Those trucks will access the site through our temporary construction road. We will be shutting down this access road, and we've coordinated that with the School of Medicine, with the Medical Foundation. We do have provisions in place per hospital protocol because our medical gas tank farm is located back here. So should anything bad happen, we will have a plan B, plan C, contingency plans. We will be restricting access, pedestrian access, on the pedestrian bridge, the sky bridge that connects these two buildings during the installation of the crane, again, just for safety precautions. But that crane will go up on this green square. Should happen from, again, over the weekend. So there shouldn't be any disruption to regular business traffic during the week. It'll be coordinated on the weekend.
Great. Thanks so much, Mike. Any questions? So you're going to do this before the football game, right?
Yes, that's the intent.
Okay, great. Thanks so much, Mike. And let's move on to the...
Mary, somehow got muted there, it looks like.
I'm sorry, I got muted. So, Legistar 51257, City of Madison updates. Ben, do you want to run through those?
Yes, I'll maybe share my screen here. Just so we can get the map view. So the first project, actually not the pin on the screen, just wanted to update folks on the project that we had presented in person last month, 619 through 699 West Mifflin Street. Landmarks approved, the Landmarks Commission approved that project subject to some conditions. The Urban Design Commission also approved it last night subject to conditions, and the project will be at Plan Commission on November 4th for their review and consideration. Then the pin on the screen is for a project at 418 to 446 West Washington Avenue and 413 to 417 West Mifflin Street. This is a project called Mifflin Chapter, which would demolish three single-family residences, four two-family residences, three three-unit apartment buildings, and a four-unit apartment building to construct a six-story multifamily building with 163 units and 510 beds. Also would have 88 underground car parking stalls and 226 underground bike parking stalls, with an additional 52 outdoor bike parking spaces. This project's going to be at Urban Design Commission on November 6th and Plan Commission on November 18th. So this actually is a project that has most of the building fronting West Washington Avenue, but it actually goes through the block and has a portion that fronts West Mifflin Street as well. And then a project that's very close by to this has also been proposed, 423 to 427 West Mifflin Street. That would demolish a single-family residence, two-family residence, and a four-unit apartment building to construct a four-story, 40-unit, and 43-bed apartment building. just repeated apartment twice there, I guess, with 19 underground car parking stalls, six surface parking stalls, with an additional 40 underground bike parking stalls and 11 outdoor bike parking stalls. This will also be at Urban Design Commission on November 6th, Plan Commission on the 18th, and requires a land combination of lots, which would be at Council on November 26th. And then the Chabad House, which I think has been discussed previously. This is at 223 and 225 Gilman Street, West Gilman Street. This is a project that was approved by Plan Commission in September, but has been delayed or has been put on hold. And then finally, we have a project that we're expecting to be submitted at some point in the future, along Francis Street. This would be a project that we're expecting to have about 400 units and 1,300 beds, possibly to include affordable beds under the downtown zoning height bonus, but again, awaiting a formal submittal on that project, if and when they choose to move forward with that. So it's a quick summary of private redevelopment projects that are in various stages of consideration. Happy to answer any questions that I can.
Any questions of Ben? Thanks so much for the update. I know this has been kind of truncated the last two meetings, so it's nice to have these. I guess the last business is adjournment with the reminder our next meeting is December 12th, and that'll be on Zoom also. Is there a motion to adjourn? You all want to sit here?
So moved.
Okay, is there a second?
Second.
Great. I'm going to assume there won't be any objections, so the motion passes. Thanks so much, everyone. Thanks, Ben.
Thank you, Mary.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, Ben. Thank you.
Thank you.